Mouthing Off is a theater, arts, and culture podcast from Bad Mouth Theater Company in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm Amanda Forstrom.
I'm Kevin Couchman.
And I'm Mari Sittner. Mouthing Off features compelling interviews and discussions with artists and creators from around the Twin Cities and beyond.
Tune in for something different online where you get your podcasts at badmouthtc.com and on the air in St. Paul through Frogtown Radio 94.1 FM.
And if you've got something going on around the Twin Cities you'd like to talk about, we want to hear from you. Email us at badmouthtc@gmail.com.
Mouthing Off is sponsored by Minnesota Playlist, the digital destination for live performing arts. Producers can find talent to work with, directors can cast productions with audition ads, teachers can find students with a classified, and audiences can find the perfect show to attend on the state's largest calendar of theater and dance shows. Find out more at minnesotaplaylist.com.
We hope you enjoy the show. Hello and welcome back. We are back on 94.1 FM Frogtown Radio or Minnesota Playlist or Spotify or Apple Playlists, wherever you get them. Doesn't matter as long as you're listening. This is Mouthing Off, a theater arts and culture podcast from Bad Mouth Theater Company, coming at you live from New York and the Twin Cities. It's another girls' hour, another girls' takeover. I'm Mari Sittner. I'm here with my co-host, Amanda Forstrom. Amanda, how are you doing today?
I'm super excited. Yes, girl hour, girl power. Let's go. I'm super excited because we have a returning guest, multiple returning guests and artists, which we love having back. And then we have a couple new voices. I want to say faces, but just voices that are collaborators on these projects. So I will first introduce Matt Kelly, back from Dark Pony. How are you, Matt?
I'm good. Busy. Really busy, but good.
That's excellent. Excellent. And who do you have with us today?
We have Kelly Nelson.
Yeah. I like three names. So.
And Corey Bowe, Corey, say hi.
Hello.
Who are joining us for our big production coming up.
Excellent. Yes.
And this big production, which you can introduce the name and the concept of, you're going to the Edinburgh Fringe, right?
Yes, we actually leave this weekend for Edinburgh Fringe for a few days before our tech. And then we're there for 22 shows. So we're there for the full month of the festival in Scotland. And Corey and Kelly are two of our actors, and Kelly's our movement director as well. For a show called Baron Fordenberg's Guide to the Paranormal.
Excellent. Okay, first of all, the audience and listeners need to hear that the Edinburgh Fringe Festival is the Fringe Festival, people. So the fact that these folks and these artists coming from the Twin Cities going to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival is huge and super exciting. So first of all, congratulations on that. Before we quickly dive into the show, I just want to ask about your process for listeners who've maybe done or been a part of the Minnesota Fringe Festival or even some other fringe festivals. What was different about this process getting into Edinburgh? And can you tell us a little bit about that, Matt, or sure. Corey and Kelly?
It's a bit of more planning. The way I describe it to a lot of people, especially those that have done Fringe here, is that it feels much more like a full production. Like you're much more of a producer because there is no lottery for Edinburgh Fringe. You essentially have to find your own venue. You make your own contracts with the venue. You set your pricing. You set all the contracts with them. Then when their fringe registration opens up, you then apply for fringe registration from there. And then you can link the two together. So Fringe offers a lot of benefits to help you with the production. They run videos. They're open to meetings. I've taken meetings with people there. Very accessible. The spaces, depending on the space or the venue that you operate with, determines a lot of things, like cost of your cost as a producer, and what they offer, because there are different venues. There's some venues that are completely free. There's other venues that cost like $30,000-$40,000 for it, you know, and those seat like 1,000+ people. So it really is a festival that you can do anything from a regular street performance to something that is Broadway level, West End level, which is amazing. And I think it allows so many opportunities and so much for anybody. But I feel like if you really want to know what production is like in the real world, this one is like the closest I've seen.
Do they have like a list of venues that have been used before, or how did you find your venue?
So luckily, Mara, my wife and I, who's also in this show, we were out there during Fringe a couple of years ago, just by chance. And so we kind of saw some venues, and we did our own research away from Fringe. But Fringe also will run I remember they did their first video of their series. They had venues, people come on and talk about their venues. And they were talking about how here's some venues you can go check out. There's things like that. But honestly, a lot of it was just my own research, looking at what possibilities. Then they sent out a list of possibilities, looking at previous years of what were possibles as well. Because there is a giant handbook that's, I want to say, like 400 pages long that you can get from Fringe. It has a list of all the venues, all their techs, like their tech specs, their everything. So you can, there, the research and the information is there. It's just, it's a lot to go through.
Yeah. And just one more kind of follow-up question. How many, for our listeners who have never been, kind of a comparison of size, you know, how many shows are put on during the Edinburgh Fringe?
Last year, I think it was like 3,800.
Yeah. So that gives like our listeners sort of the scale of what we're talking about here over an entire month, the month of August, and what goes on and how many artists and collaborators and creators kind of come into Edinburgh from all over the world, which is so exciting because you see all kinds of, you know, amazing theater. So I'm going to switch over to Kelly. So Kelly, you, I know you've been working with these fine folks for a while, collaborated with them for a while. How did you find yourself attached to this production and then in the cast and then also as a movement director?
That's a great question. Matt originally told me about this show and how we've been chatting and geeking out about Edinburgh Fringe Festival for a couple years. And I was like, yeah, someday. And of course, he just was like, bit the bullet and like just did it. And I'm like, oh my God, okay, great. Let's go. And it's like a bigger playground. And it's always really, really fun to like collaborate with Dark Pony and Matt and Mara. It's always like such a joy. He told me about this production. He had me read the script and I was like, this is great. And then he told me who else was in it. I'm like, I'm definitely in. I was joking saying that I'll be a cheer in the show if you need it. And he was like, I need you a chair, but I can use some, like, I would love to have you. And he graciously let me in the show and doing movement stuff. I'm a big nerd with movement things and I'm very grateful for this whole cast and crew and team. To not only say yes and, but to trust me when I'm like, trust that I'm like, this might seem crazy and kind of weird and kooky, but please let's just try it and see if it works. If it doesn't, we'll throw it away. And if it does, we'll keep it. So I'm very, and it's like such a joy and dream to work with people like that and that are like, yes and, or the collaboration and not like almost devising, but like, it's more of like a layer devising, not so much like we didn't have, like we had a script the whole time, which was really nice. So yeah, that's hopefully not too rambly, but that's essentially like the SparkNotes version of how I end up here.
Excellent. Yeah. I'm a huge movement person as well. I have like a Suzuki dance background. Yes. So I've also choreographed movement directed myself, productions myself. Yeah. And, it does, it really gives actors a way to be grounded sometimes, especially in new scripts where it's kind of hard to find your footing or you don't know it very well. It's brand new. And I just, yeah, when you're working with actors and creatives who are yes and, that is just such a beautiful gift.
Such a gift. I like nerd out about it. And anything like movement based, I don't know. Like a lot of times when I'm like, oh, I'm a movement director, and a lot of people are like, I don't know how to dance. And I'm like, this is not, you know, like
totally different.
Yeah.
Totally different.
But don't get me wrong. I love dance, and choreographing things is always amazing. And I love that a lot. But movement direction, it's just something about it. I don't know. I don't know. I'm beyond words. I can move into it, but
yes, right.
I always joke that I'm really not good with words, and I'm much better at feelings and moves. So I don't know. Yeah.
And what is your background as an artist? How did you come to find yourself in the art world? Was it very young? Was it kind of later in life? And then what was your, what gateway drug? Was it dance or was it theater? Was it anything else?
Anyway, sorry. I can geek out about this. I'll try to be quick, but, I grew up in a small town, and that, definitely budgeting was always a real thing, and arts were always deemed not essential. And so I always kind of joked that I was like a rebel in that, and the outcast of that whole thing. And so learning how to do art in a world and environment that doesn't really normally welcome it was always such a challenge. I hated it then, but I love it now because it helped me get to where I am today. And then so I was like, okay, well, I immediately moved the second I graduated to go to college. And then I went to college in Moorhead, and we did a lot of, of course, it's the learning aspect of everything. And like, you're just like a big sponge and absorbing every little bit that you possibly can. And I minored in dance because I was like, I've always wanted to do this, and we couldn't afford it. So like in high school. And so like, I was like, okay. But learning not only like to incorporate and weave the two of like dance and like Shakespeare and stuff like that. Or, I mean, I nerded out a lot with Shakespeare because that was one of the few things we could read in high school in a small town. and so I was like, okay, I wanted to like do a lot of focusing on that. And I was very lucky to work with a lot of professors and leaders that are different aspects of theater. So like there's musical theater, there's, you know, the classic theater. And then there's like classic, and then I had a nice little happy medium of like marrying the two. So like learning how to tell stories and devise theater and stuff like that. So I love telling stories that are not always written on paper. So when it comes to, I joked earlier with like devising theater, I'm used to not having a script until like 2 weeks before we open kind of thing, which is seat of your pants kind of feelings. But it always kind of worked out that way. And I really latched onto more movement and devising stuff like that because I believe that anyone can move. I believe that anyone, no matter the body type, no matter the like what they look like, what they sound like, or anything like that, I think that you can still portray any kind of character you want to by just moving a finger differently. Or, you know, like, and I nerd out because it's like I had a lot of leaders that were like, everyone has a tick, and so try to find a tick of each character kind of thing. And what does that look like? And how does that person move? What's their different centers? I'm probably rambling, but that's kind of thing like that. I am very movement theater and theater devising theater in general. I love how open it is to all body types, all people, all inclusive, no matter what. And so working with people that don't move, it's still a joy and a challenge because it's like talking about like leading from what you are capable of as a person as well as what your character is capable in this moment, and having that and finding that beautiful thing that helped them do that, and to watch other actors geek out and feel like a sense of like they have skipped their step almost, that they're like, oh, I did that, and you created it with you, and like we created it together. So yeah, I hope that answered your question. Sorry, there's a lot going on.
Like, no, absolutely. I feel like we can nerd out all night long. But that's for another podcast because you'll be back. She's going to be back, folks. I had a professor, side note, I had a professor that described it in a really interesting way. It's like how this character locomotes through space.
Yeah.
You know, which is really cool. But anyway, again, another episode. Let's shift to Corey. Corey, how did you find yourself in the theatrical space with these fine folks and in this with this script, and then a little bit about your origin story, as it were.
Yeah. First, she's not going to like this, but I'm going to make Kelly blush and describe going off what you were just saying about like working with actors who don't think they can move, we can't dance, whatever. So I worked with Kelly for the first time on Eurydice at Theater in the Round a couple of years ago. And there was one specific day. So she was the movement choreographer, like the captain for that, the movement director. And I came in one day and I was like, I'm not a dancer. I'm not a mover. And she was like, immediately, everyone's a mover. But I was like, I want to try something as I'm playing this like mythical, I'm playing the Lord of the Underworld. And I was like, I'm posing as a human in the real world. I want to try this thing. It's not scripted, where my character is essentially trying to break out of this human skin bag he's in.
Ooh, lovely.
Can I just do something like weird and disjointed and like gross? And I'm like, I haven't practiced this at all. It's just in my head. I want to try it. And she's like, do it. I did it. And it was such a vulnerable thing to like, because I don't do movement stuff. I just don't. So to be in a space surrounded by people who some of them are specifically movement actors, right, in this show. And I have Kelly watching and Sophie Payton, the director, watching. And I just did it. And to have everyone's reaction be so positive, and to have Kelly be over there like clapping, like, yes, yes, more of that. We're keeping that. We're going to like, we'll refine it. We'll make it even better. But like the instinct's there. You're awesome. Let's do it. So like, just a point, like to give credit to you for being someone who's like, I mean, you're exactly what you're saying. Like everyone can move.
Yeah.
So that was just a really, and that's like one of the best moments I've had in the rehearsal room. So, and that segueing back is how I first met Kelly and worked with her on the show, was through Eurydice. And I had done a couple with Dark Pony, done a couple of the Minnesota Drinking Game shows, which is how I met more of the producers of Dark Pony. And then I think there was one day where I was putting out in the world, like, I want to do more, like, just sit down and get together and do table reads of scripts and stuff. And Matt and his partner Mara reached out and said, hey, we want to read the script. You want to come over and have dinner? And we'll, you know, I think the original plan was to get like some of us together to read it. And then it ended up being I was the only one who showed up. So it was the three of us. And we were like outside, like had dinner at this place. And we just read the script. And it was this script, Baron Vordenberg's Guide to the Paranormal. And we had a great time just reading through it. And then that was like July, right before the 4th last year. So then a couple months later, September comes and Matt reaches out and he's like, hey, I'm going to enter this into the Fringe Festival. You already did. And he was like, so if you want to go, you know, don't plan anything for next August 2025. Like, you want to go to Scotland and actually play this role? And I was like, yeah, okay, sure.
Yeah.
yeah, thanks. I'll totally just, you know, pin that on my calendar. And then a month later, you're like, oh, well, we officially apply. We'll see. And I'm like, oh, yeah, okay. I'll talk to my boss when that happens. That'll be a dream. And another month goes by and he's like, oh, we got accepted. So now you have to. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I actually have to ask for this time off. So, and then I put it through and somehow my boss approved it. I told my partner at home, and I thought she would be like, you cannot go away for a month to Scotland. And she was awesome. And she's like, you have to do this. So without any more excuses, I like signed on for sure. And I think, I mean, we started getting really into it in like February, March with reading. And now this is our end of our third month of rehearsing and preview tomorrow. So I think we're ready, but that's kind of the long and short of how I got involved. Yeah. Yeah. Which has been really a dream. It doesn't feel real yet. I will say that. I don't know if you're feeling that too.
Yeah, I agree.
Like until next Sunday when we got on the plane, I think I'm feeling like this will all be,
exactly.
I'll wake up or something. Yeah. Because this is truly incredible. Like you don't get a chance to do this every day, every year, every lifetime. So yeah. So I'm very humble, very happy to be a part of it.
And I have like a theater nerd technical question, but how long do you guys get to be in that space before your show opens? Because I think that if you haven't done a show, you know, if you haven't been a part of a theater production ever or in a while, it can completely change when it enters a new space. So how long do you guys get?
So we get to see the space outside of having blueprints and photos of the space and actually talking to the people who run and everything like that. We don't get into the space till the 31st. And in the morning, we have an hour and a half, 145 minutes to run our tech, figure out our tech, and then start the show on the first. So it really is very similar to Fringe here, where you get that one tech and that's it. That's what you go with. The bonus thing is we have 22 shows. So after that first week, I, you know, more than anything, we're already going to be comfortable and in that space. And then we know the inside of the space. Now we're good. Let's move on. So we do have the luxury of time as performers versus some Fringe where you only have 5 performances and that's it. Good luck. That's all. Which I, it still adds the fun of Fringe in my mind that it shows that anything can happen in theater. And at Fringe, usually something happens that's not scripted or is bad. And people are still forgiving and people are still just like, yep, that's how this goes. You know, it's just trying to figure out how to do a tech for a show where we can't run the full show because the tech would take too much time away to run, do a full run with it. So it's a challenge. It'll be a challenge. It'll be fun.
And how much tech do you guys have? Because I was in kind of a similar situation 2 or 3 years ago where I was directing a show and we only had 1 hour to do our tech. And it wasn't until we got into the theater, nobody had told us that all of the white lights were actually different colors. They were like different shades of white and like one was yellow. So stuff like that can always come up. So did you kind of factor that in? Like how much tech do you guys have?
So I always envisioned the show being low tech because of it being Fringe and just doing Fringe here and knowing like, yeah, we could do some really cool things if we had a full tech crew, lighting designers, sound designers behind the whole thing. There's a lot of cool stuff we could do, but because we don't have the time, because we don't have to do that, we would have to hire people and bring them to Scotland with us, which is also a much bigger cost. I purposely made it so our lighting cues are very basic because our structure of our show allows us to just have a straight wash really for the show. And then we have sound cues. I think our total amount of cues, including blackouts and all that, I think we're around 10, maybe a little under that, which is like nothing. It really isn't. Mm-hmm. It's up at the front, something in the middle, and then something at the end.
Gotcha. Go ahead, Mari.
Oh, I was just going to say, that's great. That's so simple. Because I think again, if you don't know, so many shows that seem so simple can have hundreds of cues.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great to factor it in. But now that we've talked around the show and talked about all of the nerdy technical things, can you tell us what your show is about? Give us the rundown.
Sure. Does anyone want, or do you want to talk about
it? Yeah, I'll take a stab at it without like giving like spoilers away. I don't know how careful you're about spoilers. A little bit. Okay. So the show, Baron Vordenberg's Guide to the Paranormal. Baron Vordenberg is kind of like very similar to Van Helsing. For anyone familiar with like the Dracula legend and stories. So the characters of this show, including Vordenberg, are from the novella Carmilla, Matt, is written by
Sheridan Le Fanu.
Thank you. Which predates Dracula as a vampire story. So the character is pulled from that. And in this case, you know, we're in the contemporary world. So Baron Vordenberg is a monster hunter, essentially. And right now he's starting off a tour of lectures and symposiums describing, you know, how to hunt monsters, different paranormal creatures, how to find them, identify them, fight them, capture them, kill them as need be. So this is, the idea is that the play takes place during his very first lecture, which in this case is in Edinburgh. And what ensues during that 50-minute lecture, it's all very like, what missing scene, like it's all happening there on stage. So it's a play that's designed, structured as like a symposium, as a lecture, but various antics and things befall myself, Baron Vordenberg, and my assistants, who they're not here, but I can name them. My assistants, Gothic and Grotesque, who are paranormal adjacent characters who now work for me. Is that giving away too much? I don't think that's giving away too much. Okay. Yeah.
I want to read the snippet from thespaceuk.com where you can get your tickets. thespaceuk.com and search for Dark Pony Productions, Baron Vordenberg's Guide to the Paranormal. We cordially invite you, Monster Hunter, to an unforgettable night. The world-renowned paranormal expert Baron Vordenberg and his helpers, Gothic and Grotesque, give away trade secrets and expertise on hunting the unknown. The first in a series of lectures, the Baron tackles the most cunning creatures of the night. Please RSVP, as seats are limited for this most special event. Photo and book signings will be available for and after the symposium, and your safety is our concern.
August 1st. That was much better at describing what this show is.
No, that's fantastic. It is August 1st through 9th, 11th through 14th, and it is 50 minutes long, and then August 15th and 16th, and then 18th through the 23rd at the space at Symposium Hall in Edinburgh.
And then I do want to make note that the 18th is very specifically a relaxed performance for anyone that knows people or are happen to be over there and don't want to see a horror comedy show that's, I should say more horror, but just don't make it more accessible for people that certain things might affect.
Gotcha. No, thank you for that. And Matt, so then I'm going to circle back to you and sort of ask, what was the inspiration for this? Where did you sort of have this idea? How did you begin sort of formulating the, you know, structure of this? Because I assume it's direct address to the audience then, if it's a lecture sort of.
It's very much, it was originally designed to be half immersive, half not. It has kind of boiled down from the original scripts because of timing. We discovered, oh, this is way longer than what we're paying for. So we gotta bring it down to that 50-minute spot. It was originally started off as a writing exercise for monologues to try to help me write monologues and just get better at writing much bigger things. Then it kind of fell in this world of TED Talky lecture series into things. And like, I'm a huge fan, and I think we've talked about two previously, but a huge fan of Carmilla. Is one of my favorite vampire stories ever. Highly recommend everyone read it. It is wonderful on so many levels. And I thought it would be fun to try to do something out of that lore. Thus, Baron Vordenberg, who's a very minor character in it, and we've kind of exploded to being something much bigger in our show. And then I'm a huge fan of Commedia dell'arte and movement and clowning. So I added in two characters to help do this whole thing, Gothic and Grotesque, who are just wonderful, energetic and passionate about what they do. and literally have no lines the entire play. They just exist as characters. That's not spoiling anything, because I think that's fun that they have no lines and they have a huge impact in the show. So it's been kind of a fun process writing it. The original script had way more audience participation, actually. So now it's just less audience participation and more audience inclusion, I guess is probably the best way of saying it. Mostly due to time. That stuff just takes time. There's a lot of fun in it. There's a lot of brutality in it, both verbally and non-verbally. It was fun to write something that was comedic horror too, versus just let's see how much I can gross people out and scare people and make them feel uncomfortable for an hour, like the podcast.
How long did it take to come up with the first, you know, what you would say first draft? And then who did you sort of share it with to begin with?
First draft, 4 days.
Wow. Excellent.
For the first draft. And then Corey was one of the people that first read it. Mara was one of the first people that read it, and myself. And then I did kind of a rewrite. And then as it's kind of progress, things have been cut from the initial table read. So we table read the entire original script, And then from there, it was like, oh, this is long. We need to cut. So immediately we took off the big things, like the audience participation and everything like that. And then have slowly kind of broken down there. Like, okay, we've added so much more movement. So now we need to remove some of these words because we want the movement, things like that. And that was more of the ebb and the flow through the rehearsal process than anything. But what makes the script easy to cut is it is monologue focused. So a lot of times we can cut like a paragraph, you know, and it doesn't take anything away from what story that's being told, which means my writing is terrible because like,
no, it's more like, oh, Corey's been talking a long time. Let's put some of that guy's lines out. Yeah.
And so unfortunately we've had to cut a few things that we all really liked. That was fun and cool little aspects of the world we've created, but just not necessarily needed for the story to be told. And when you have 50 minutes, you kind of have to focus on the need of the story rather than the cool stuff. So the goal is to possibly launch it again here in Minnesota with the full script and maybe even add in the improv stuff if we feel like it, or the audience participation stuff if we feel like it.
Yeah, that's amazing. I was just going to ask if you saw it have a life after Edinburgh and then with, you know, the full script as you intended it beyond the 50 minutes, because it is, you know, Fringe is a blessing and a curse for the time, right? As like well as tech that you were mentioning, Mari and Matt, that you have these tech restraints, you only have so much time. Well, you also have time restraints. So I think for the Minnesota Fringe, it should be it's like 45 minutes about, 50 minutes, the same thing. Edinburgh is similar, I guess.
No, actually, we could do a 2-hour, 3-hour show if we wanted.
Wow. Okay.
A lot of time. Yeah. It depends on the venue. Mara and I sat in conversations with the space about this. We were negotiating our contract. And a lot of it came down to budget because you pay for per minute, per time you are in that space. So if you're there for 3 hours, your budget skyrockets. So what could be a $3,000 show ends up being a $8,000 show because you wanted an extra 2 hours or something like that. Our budget was not that, but that's just an example of it. So we did have to make that hard choice when we were looking at the contract, like, okay, how much time is it worth to do the show? Well, at least an hour is a good spot because people do want to see multiple shows. And the lucky thing is there, the people have a better chance of going to your show if they know, oh, this is only an hour commitment, then I can get to the next show that is a 2-hour show or an hour show. I can go see 20 shows. But I know like there's some shows at our venue where we're at is an hour, 90 minutes, I think, or a little over.
Mm-hmm.
So it really does depend on, like I said, it depends on what you want to do, how long you want, and what your budget is. You can kind of, it's really kind of allows you to be a producer. So,
yeah, exactly. And I think that's kind of the issue too, if just even regular production, right, is renting a venue space for a full production. You know, if you're trying to do it a month long and how many days and how long your show is, you know, if it's a 2.5-hour show, that gets spendy, you know. So, and I think also, you know, for our generation and the incoming generation, like Mari is over here, it's a lot more palatable to see a 90 minute or less show. And like you said, in a context like this, where it's the Fringe, you can see so many more shows than just, you know, I could only fit in a couple 2-hour shows and I'm kind of theatered out for the day or something. This, you can really see, you know, a few different things sprinkled out, different kind of venues.
And you know, if we wanted to do it 2 weeks, we probably would have gone for a 90 or 2-hour show because we're paying about the same for a 2-hour show for a 2-week run. So there's a lot of that game playing too. Like,
yeah,
do a full month? Should we do 5 days? Should we do a full week? And our conclusion was, before we even cast it and everything, was like, if we're gonna do it, we don't know if we're gonna do this again or when we'll do this again. Let's do the full festival, see how it goes. Kind of get an understanding of how that is. And if we do it again, we can choose to do a full month or 2 weeks or a week or 5 days, you know, from there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a great point. From like a, like I said, sort of putting on producer hat standpoint for people who are thinking about doing a Fringe Festival and the sort of format they're thinking about. Tell us more about like the full production, and could we possibly see it at like the TC Horror Fest?
Well, not this year for sure. They've already booked their season for this year and everything. Maybe we might throw it into the hat for next year, or something similar. We'll see. And what was the other question? I'm sorry. You wanted to hear more about.
Oh, I forgot about my other question now, because now I'm excited about like being here for like the full production possibility. Sure. But tell me, I guess, a little bit about when you guys started rehearsals and how those have been going, where you're at in the process. And then as Mari was mentioning, you know, you kind of don't know what to expect until you're there in person, right? As many videos and calls and descriptions and pictures that you can see of the space, you never really know what's going on and what's what until you're there. So tell us a little bit about that rehearsal process and then kind of what's left to do there.
Yeah, come on, take
it away. Oh, okay. That might be great. Yeah. We started our rehearsal process in like end of April, early May.
Yeah.
Something like that. Because I feel like I don't know. He told us something like a pivotal character choice that like he was like, oh yeah, by the way, and I because that's a big spoiler, so I can't say it. So he said that he's like, this is the thing, and I'm like, cool. Can we start now then? Kind of thing, because anything with new shows, I feel like we need twice as much time. And if we, you know, if we feel over rehearsed, we can back that off. But I don't know. I like to be as prepared as possible, and I know everyone else does too. But so when we got started, because it's a brand new show, and like these are characters that like came from his head, and also Carmilla and like stuff like that. So we were like, let's try to find these characters and like, how do they walk? What do they look like? How do they think and feel? And like, a lot of these moments go from 0 to 100 in like a moment. And it's such a, I geek out about that. And it's like so fun because it's a great challenge. And Matt was wonderfully willing to like, let me like dive in this with like, when it comes to like dramaturgically, finding these characters and like how and like finding the souls of them basically. So when we kind of got into the start of this, before we even really like, we obviously read the play and we're like, okay, great, we know who we are, and we just kind of started really diving into what our characters, how they function and like how they be like. Essentially I had us do like visual viewpoints of like, what is your character's centers? Like, is it head center, heart center, will center, going into that and like having them try to find their walk. It sounds weird, but I was like, if you ever on a busy street, like try to find someone and like watch how they walk and like, what kind of center do you think that they are? And like, that's anyway. So, and a lot of, and again, God bless his cast, because I've had a lot of people being like, what the, you know, I like, what a weird thing to say, but so we kind of dove into that and then did more runs and kind of finding more of like what these characters, how they function. And I'm a big fan of Michael Chekhov workshops and techniques and stuff like that. I love it so much, especially when it comes to like, it's already like a lot of intimacy coordination is already built into that, which I'm obsessed with. And I was like, hey, there's a couple like moments, you know, like, cause it's horror, you know? So like, there's a couple intimate moments, whether that's touch or emotional or, you know, all the above. And again, Matt was very open and willing to like have us like play with a corridors exercise, if you guys are familiar with those. I love it. It helps me not have to use my own personal as if and my own like traumas and past and stuff like that. And so like, I can be safe and still be like crossing that threshold from, okay, I'm going from Kelly to the Countess or whatever character, and like going from Corey to the Baron, like taking that step into the character and like feeling out what that feels like and is like going into there. So mainly it was just a quarters exercise for those that know the Spark Notes version of it. It was like just trying to find the past, present and future like of your character pretty much. So like, you know, each time it's like you I can, and I'll try to spark notes it, but like you're in the hallway, right? And like, you know, you come across this door and then you open the door and this is like your first viewpoints of like your past and what you remember and like how your character came like before the play even began. And then the second, the first bracket, and you, like, and you can have as many points as you want, but for sake of time, I was like, let's just stick to 5, you know, like, because we don't, and we can be here for years. And then the second bracket was the expected future. So like how your character believes your, like what is going to happen in the show and beyond. And then the third bracket is the actual future of what actually happens in the play and which points are pivotal to your character and how, you know, like how they change. And after each bracket, you choose the different gestures of Michael Chekhov's. It's like the, the lift, the push, the singe, the ring, the, you know, open, close, like all those different kinds. So if you ever are trying to get to with your character from 0 to 100, you can do that gesture after experiencing that corridor and like, okay, cool. I know what that felt like muscle memory wise, pretty much. And I can pop into this. And so that has been helpful for me for sure. And I'm very, and again, like I'm also very grateful with how open and yes, and this cast and team has been, because I've worked in a lot of productions where it's not seen as needed, or it's not, we don't have time for that. And it's like, well, we can make time. And that's, you know, I understand the whole timing thing. I get it. But anyway, and so now, because we have that underneath our, under our belts, I also thought that was very important with us, because we're going to be going from our safe space over here to a whole new country, a whole new space, whole new thing. So those gestures hopping into whatever space we're in, will help us get there. Yeah. And also, it's also really fun to like, listen to these actors being like, to just really geek out about their characters of like, I think my character was like this in the past. And like, that's how I got from point A to point B, you know? And so that's always really, really fun to like have that like joy of creating that.
Really felt like doing a show back in, this is gonna sound weird, but back like in school, even where we got the time to sit down, do character work, character study, to actually work the craft with the cast, with the director, with the movement director, and also spend time on our own and do it. And it feels like, compared to some productions that, like even Kelly said, that I've been part of, it's like, here's your character, figure it out, we'll see you tomorrow for your first day of blocking. Like, great, cool. I still don't know what the character is. How do you expect me to understand the blocking? You know, things like that.
I know that I say the exact same thing. And I don't see any reason why we shouldn't be doing, we're always learning as actors, we're still learning. We should always be in training mode and learning new things. And I don't see a reason why most theater shouldn't be doing it just like this. We have constraints on time and stuff, but like, so for this, you know, we come in, Mara is a trainer as well. So we do like a whole mobility warm-up stuff. We have our cast actually working out together every week on Sunday for 2 hours, doing like an intensive workout. We check in, like, what is our color today? Green, yellow, red. Like, how are we feeling physically? Is touch okay? And that's all before we even start. And then, like Kelly said, so the whole corridors exercise. And then we're also doing a bunch of improv just on our own of like, now let's just do this scene as written. And not as written, let's do this scene, but let's do it in our own words and just improvise it.
Yeah.
And this is all stuff that we did in college when you're first learning how to act. But then you just stop. And the expectation becomes from theaters that, no, you're a professional. You'll come in. You'll just know how to do all this work on your own. And that's great, but then you don't have that in the space ability to connect with your fellow actors, where it's not all, you know, we can't necessarily get together until we're in that rehearsal space. So I think finding more time to be able to do that would benefit, I mean, every single production, right? Like, there's stuff here I've learned for the first time that I'm going to use now forever. And it's like, what else can I learn if we do this, if every production was to do this? So I feel very fortunate as an actor, but that's exactly it. It feels like we're in school again, like playing and learning, discovering. And I would challenge every theater to find more ways to do that in the rehearsal process.
And continuing just yes, ending it all. You know, I know as director, I felt like sometimes I had to be like, whoa, okay, hold on. But like, that's my role in this whole production, is to put on those constraints, be like, look, I'm sorry, but we have to do this. I'm not saying no to what you're doing. I'm just saying, like, here's the reality now. of we have 50 minutes. I would love if this was a 20-minute sequence. Unfortunately, we can't do that. So how do we now take everything you did and truncate that down? And now let's work together and making that work. Your vision, my vision, work together. And if we have to scrap one or both, then we will. Yeah. But at least we experimented and tried it, see how it flew.
Yeah.
And maybe it comes up later on when we do a run, because as we all know, shows evolve the longer they run. The characters, the structure stays the same, the pattern stays the same, but the play becomes different, the reactions become different. So we'll see where it goes. We have so much subtext, we have so much story, so much lore, so many things thrown in from all these exercises that literally this playground is huge. Yeah. And the only thing holding us back now is time.
And the thing that like makes me geek out too is like because of how much depth and like just life that we've given to these people because in our heads, and based like we're basing it from the text, which is really like, such a great structure, and so we can build like the fat and the muscles and the bones and stuff like that, which is amazing. Is that like because we have like we could. I don't not that I'm gonna tell Matt to do this, but like Matt could like write another show about each character, like in its own world and its own lore, which I think is just because again, that's just giving so much care and tenderness to that character that it's like it doesn't matter. And again, it's like there's no small roles because each person, even if you have one line, if there's still like so much heart to it and life. But yeah, I can ramble on about that.
I thought about Kelly.
I know, yeah. I
thought about serious.
Mari, you were going to ask a question?
Yeah, I mean, it's so lovely hearing about your guys' process. It really seems like such a gift. It really is the most amazing thing in the world when you are able to have the time and the space to play. And I think that that is the number one thing that happens during a production. There's just budget considerations. Sometimes you have to be out of the space at a certain time so that another group can come in, or you can't get into your space whenever you want. And so you end up just rushing through your process, and it's so nice when you don't have to. But I love hearing about the process, but I want to find out just a couple of things that you guys learned, not the how, but the what that you learned about your characters and how they, Amanda, what did you say, how they locomote through the world? I love that.
Yes, how someone locum or spirit thing, whatever, how they locomote throughout three-dimensional space, getting from one place to another, you know, and that has to do with weight and sight and perspective and just like so many different factors. And it is, it's like, you know, watching how people live, it sounds so stupid and cliche, but really, really watching how somebody reads a book, really watching how somebody sits down, how somebody like picks something up off the floor, it can say so much about them. One of my favorite, just as a side note, one of my favorite exercises to do with students when I teach or like adjunct teach is to have someone sit in a chair and have them do nothing. Just sit in the chair, do nothing. And then everybody else in the class thinks that you gave them a direction to be somebody, to whatever. Mm-hmm. And so they automatically are watching this person for 5 minutes in total utter silence. And they watch this person in the chair doing nothing. And because an audience desperately wants to understand, they want to connect with this person just sitting in a chair, they make up all these stories. It's like, oh, you're waiting in a hospital. Oh, you're waiting for your son or your wife to come home. You're really depressed today, and you know they got bad news that morning. Or oh, they look like really silly, like they're thinking about doing something illegal. Or they, you know, and they're just making all of this stuff up when you're literally the direction was sit in a chair.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so the smallest, tiniest things are being read by the audience. And I guess one of my things is sometimes as Americans, we over season our theatrical dishes sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I think less is more, and letting because the audience wants it. They want it so bad. Mm-hmm. So let them do the work they want to, you know? But sorry, that was a whole total side note.
And that's that's totally my philosophy too. I mean, I come from, you know, a theater but improv background as well, and I personally, I love silence. I love the more time we can be quiet on stage. There's so much more that can happen, you know. And I think it is forgotten a lot on sometimes that bated breath is just amazing, and it can make or break a scene or an entire show. Mm-hmm. I could change it from horror to a rom-com. So it's,
yeah. Absolutely. Corey or Matt or Kelly, can we plug before one more time before we're running out of time here, if I'm not mistaken, Mari? So before we get into the winding down, what is the website where people can find tickets, or how can people get there?
Sure. It is the Space UK. I can't remember the exact website because there's like some backslashes and things like that. But if you go to the Space UK, and just type in Baron or Dark Pony Productions, our show will pop up. You can buy tickets through there. We, in case you're wondering, we get full box office. So whatever tickets you do buy, do come to us. They don't go to other organizations or anything like that, or a third party ticketing venue. You can also find them on the Edinburgh Fringe website. But they do take a cut of those tickets. Just to be aware, but either site, I'm okay. If you just want to come see the show, so those are the two spots you can find it. If you want to find out more information or find out, watch our travels too, you can follow each one of us on Instagram or follow the show on Instagram through Dark Pony Productions. Cause I'm sure we'll be posting a ton. Right now, our website has a little bit up there. Is depending on how much I can update while we're out there, that way I get some stuff as well. And the other thing is we have a little book, because there is a book referenced in the play called B is for Baron, which it's right down there. So we actually wrote a little novella for the show. And I right now it's available digitally. This is the original script, so not the one we are running at Edinburgh. So this is the full script, the full original piece, thing like that. And then the paper copies are going to be a little bit different than the one I have in my hand, but those will be available soon as well.
Perfect. So the spaceuk.com, get your tickets there. The show is actually going to be in the space at Symposium Hall, which is just a few blocks away from Festival Theatre and Surgeons Hall Museums in Edinburgh. So all very, you know, walkable, and you're going to find so many fun things along the way and unexpected things, shows that you'll want to go see. So I just want to circle back then with Matt and Kelly and Corey. Where can people find you all on socials and follow you? What are your handles?
Mine is Ayid Hajjaj, which I can spell for you.
Perfect.
If you ever look up the name, the author, the director, anything like that on that stuff, my name song is there. It is spelled R-A-E-D, like read, with the E reverse, and then Hajjaj is an H-O-J-I-E-J.
Perfect. Kelly?
I have a couple, and I need to post on more, but Kelly Khaleesi, like the drag. Yeah. So it's K-E-L-L-Y and then K-H-A-L-E-E-S-I, like Daenerys.
You are that.
Perfect.
Cool. And mine is I'm just on Instagram at Corey Ryan Bowe, CoreyRyanBoe.
And then from there, you probably can find the rest of the cast, as we all have Instagrams. And then if you're on our website, darkpointingproductions.com, you can always click on that Facebook or that Instagram, and it should take you to either our radio one or our production one. Both will be posting on, so it's not, the radio show is on break until next season. So it will be right with this stuff mostly.
Perfect. Well, Mari, did you have any last questions, or did any of you fine folks have any last comments before we wrap up here?
No, it's just always a joy to be on the podcast with you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you guys for taking the time.
Audience has to buy their plane tickets to Scotland,
Yeah.
Yeah, no pressure, but that's really what this is about. Yeah.
Exactly. Get your butt to Scotland, get in a kilt, have a drink. Is Macallan? Macallan, is that a Scotch whiskey?
Yeah. Macallan, yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And go see Baron Vordenberg's Guide to the Paranormal by Dark Pony Productions. And again, listeners, you have been listening to Mouthing Off by Bad Mouth Theater Company here with Mari Sittner and myself, Amanda Forstrom. We're missing our third of the tripod, Kevin Kautzman, who will be back next time on the show. But thank you so much, Frogtown Radio, and everybody for coming on. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll see you next time.